They lived a lifetime, and they lived these labor issues that they bring to you over the airwaves every Monday night on Labor Radio. These people are passionate about these issues, and that's what makes KABU so special. But Amy, I know you and I walked in and had no radio experience, and KABU trains you to come and actually produce a show, how to do an interview, how to get on the air, talk in a mic. I mean, everything. They just train you with every aspect of producing a radio show, and here we are.
And for free too, just like the working tradeswoman.
But nothing is for free. That's why we're asking for your contribution. 877-500-5266. And not only Amy mentioned the knit cap, the knit beanie that you can get for your $10 a month donation, but also we have a brand new KABU Radio t-shirt, and it says KABU Radio right across the top. And for a pledge of $10 a month, you can also get that. And we have a special drawing also available just for calling with your donation. You can be entered into to win a prize. Today's drawing is for a $250 gift certificate to Portland U Brew and Pub, and this covers a beer making experience for up to 7 people. So grab a bunch of your friends, make some beer, have a party. This sounds awesome. I think this sounds great.
Yeah, and you get to keep 15 gallons, apparently.
15 gallons sounds like a party to me. Yeah. That's all I got to say. Just for calling in with your donation right now, we can enter you into that drawing. And you have a chance to pull together 6 of your friends and learn how to make beer and have a great time.
Yeah, that's for all donations today entered in. And the number to call is 877-500-5266.
And your membership empowers people in your community to offer you the news, the information, and perspectives that are relevant in your life, as you just heard on Labor Radio, to give women the help, the guidance, the information to learn how to become a tradeswoman. So call 877-500-5266.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight, I'm airing audio from a performance called Shaping a Future Life After Prison, as well as audio from an interview with Dawn, whose monologue I'm broadcasting tonight. Shaping a Future took place on October 29th, 2017, at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. This performance was free, open to the public, and the culmination of a series of writing workshops organized by Carol Imani and funded by the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Shaping a Future included monologues written and read by 9 individuals who had spent time in prison. They told stories of redemption and determination related to their reentry to society after prison. They also highlighted the failings of our criminal justice system. Tonight is part 2, a membership drive special, and it includes the second monologue. This performance is only being broadcast here on KABU. As you listen to this story and think about how much you value being able to hear these personal truths, put your money into programming that touches your heart and broadens your understanding by making a secure donation online at kboo.fm or over the phone by calling 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. We'll start tonight's show with director Chris Karshmar introducing Dawn's monologue.
We'll now hear Surrender in a Box by Dawn.
Imagine a six-year-old girl happily walking out of a store with a new toy. Since I was about knee-high to a grasshopper, not many people noticed me. With the purple elephant in hand, I calmly walked out of the store without paying a damn penny for it. At that moment, I felt a false sense of liberation from the poverty I'd faced. And I didn't have the faintest inclination that what I had done was a crime. For me, doing crime would become a way of life growing up on the Umatilla Reservation near Pendleton in the 80s and 90s. After the purple elephant, I began to make my steady climb up the criminal ladder, and I graduated to stealing $1,000 bikes, high quality pot, and my mom's car on a regular basis, all before I was a teenager in the early 90s. I quickly went from selling dope on the elementary playground to selling sex for dope to the local pedophile drug dealers at the tender age of 13. I was also violent because growing up I was treated abusively in many ways. Violence would drive the desire to gain my power back. Early on in my childhood, I had a fight to the death mentality. This would lead to violent run-ins in the name of self-defense. At age 15, I stabbed my drug dealer boyfriend in an attempt to get him to stop beating me. I was let off because it was considered self-defense. In 1998, I graduated to my first weapons charge for almost shooting my abusive boyfriend who was just trying to stop me from another suicide attempt. I was looking at a possible 12 years in prison if they were able to upgrade my charges. But any further wrongdoing was unable to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. My criminality would only progress as I got older. The statistics on the levels of crime, violence, addiction, sexual abuse on the reservations very much surpass the national average. And I experienced all of that firsthand. At an early age, I had survived many of the horrors that are sadly common on reservations like the one I grew up on. Having lived through so much of that, I made my first suicide attempt at 12. I went to my first adolescent residential treatment center also at 12. And I was brutally raped at 12. All of this was the perfect recipe for gut-wrenching despair. I felt as if oppression ran so deep in the land that it seemed like it was in the ground. Ultimately, my criminal behaviors became a way of life to feed an out-of-control drug and alcohol habit. At the time, I was a newly birthed heroin addict with a relentless hunger to use, even though I cried whenever my boyfriend would stick the needle in my arm. At age 23, I was jumping in and out of cars with nothing more than a bikini and a tube top used as a skirt. I regularly got beat by my abusive boyfriends and have been in many fights. I've been beaten, stabbed, raped, shot at, kidnapped, and lied to more times than you can imagine. All of those were supposed to be the best years of my life. But all of that changed when I was arrested on March 5th, 2014. I overdosed in front of my daughter, Deja, who was just 3 years old. The overdose led to a near-death experience in which all I wanted was to see Deja one last time. All of a sudden, my eyes opened. I looked up and saw people surrounding me who seemed to be 15 foot tall and perhaps angels. But these angels ended up being the tribal police, the tribal emergency medical technicians, and the FBI. The EMT shuffled me away to the hospital as my little girl was whisked away by a Department of Children and Family Services caseworker. By 1 p.m., I was booked into the Umatilla County Jail. I had managed to overdose, be hospitalized, lose custody of Deja, and go to jail in a record 3-hour period. The aftermath left me alone, on my knees, and with a river of tears streaming down my face. I knew that I was tired of being a slave to heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, and alcohol, but how could I break free? I had seen my dad, Daryl, suffer from the same vicious cycle, and I knew some of his demons had become mine too. My real prison was criminality, drug addiction, alcoholism, violence, poverty, and prostitution. I felt like I would eventually die with a needle in my arm, and I wondered if society had created a monster. Maybe so, but I also knew the only person I could hold accountable was myself. If I could choose one word to describe what was most instrumental to my reentry, what word would that be? What did it take to break down the walls that kept me prisoner? That one word would be surrender. That's because all of my life I've been trying to escape all the ways in which reservation life had hurt me with angry and defiant behaviors. Trying not to surrender to all of that pain, I used all kinds of drugs and drank, committed criminal acts, including prostitution, to pay for my using, and acted violently to assert myself. But what had that resulted in for me? I finally understood that all I had done was put myself into horrible consequences. And now I found myself literally in a box, a jail cell, having almost died and all but lost my daughter. So I had to finally be willing to surrender to all those behaviors, walk away from them, and find the power in myself to free myself from the box. And that's what I began to do. I gave up all the illegal activities I once adamantly participated in on a daily basis. I had to believe that something greater was working in my life. So in faith, I took a spiritual leap and let go. By sifting through all the hopelessness, I found a timelessly beautiful type of hope that never really dies. So although I was beaten and broken, by surrendering, I was able to begin changing my life. I knew that I meant it when one day my past crossed with a police officer, and though there were no charges against me, I immediately raised my hand and said, "I surrender." He was amused and confused, but he seemed to understand what I was really saying. The road I travel today is much different than the one from which I disembarked. In recovery, I stepped into a whole new world with unfamiliar rules. If I wanted to make it in this world, I had to adapt. A life without crime meant getting a legal job. A life without drugs meant learning how to live without using them. which was so hard because I was fighting against my own nature, having such a strong inclination to use. A life without violence meant learning how to deal with my anger in a healthier way. At times, the answer to my problems was simply doing the next right thing by putting one foot in front of the other, by breathing, and by not giving up. My surrender truly began on April 4th, 2014, when I stayed at Central City Concerns Hooper Detox for 14 days. During that time, I helped get my newly detoxed body into the Native American Residential Treatment Center outside of Portland. After 4.5 months there, with the help of the Acero Oxford House, I was able to move to sober housing. The hardest battle was jumping through the hoops of the Reunification Plan Tribal Department of Children and Family Services required of me to get my daughter back. It included going to court, finding stable housing, and a decent job, all while staying sober. I had a whole slew of monsters to defeat, and it would prove to be the most strenuous, stressful challenge I had faced. But I could see the silver lining around the clouds for the first time. I was truly changing. And with the help of my tribal lawyer, after 2 years of struggle, I did finally get custody of my daughter, Deja, again. I wish that I could have taken my friends with me on this journey. When I visited the Reservation Agency Cemetery, I gently placed my one-year coin down on a friend's grave who had died from a heroin overdose. The other challenge I had faced is becoming self-sufficient. And though I had a flagging job, I am still unable to be self-supportive due to the seasonal nature of construction work. At the same time, though, I have been able to be blessed by being able to work towards complete independence with the help of the Washington County Housing Yes Program. And I've also participated in work source programs such as the Health Careers Northwest Program and the Work Experience Program and the Prisoner Reentry Program. With this help, I'm going back to school to become a dental assistant. My goal is to work for the NARA Dental Clinic someday, since they have been such an instrumental part of my recovery. The WEX program has also helped me to gain employment at the Bridges to Change as a certified recovery mentor. One day, I hope to return to the reservation and create my own mentor program for those who need support in the recovery reentry process. Nothing means more to me than gaining back physical custody of my daughter Deja, who is now 7. The weighted down face of sadness she once wore is now replaced with laughter and smiles. But the greatest miracle is the little girl I once was, now grown into a woman, has continued to beat the odds since April 5th, 2014. In learning how to surrender, to change, to leave behind the person I was, I am, day by day, week by week, year by year, becoming the person I was meant to be. I cannot be put in a box. Thank you.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. You just heard Surrender in a Box, written and read by Dawn. Now we'll hear Dawn speak about the editing process she went through while writing her monologue, as well as her intention for sharing her story This audio is from an interview I had with Dawn.
The monologue is based on my story, you know, as far as reentry process and a little bit about my history, criminal history in particular. I'm bringing light to my life, which a lot of times as a Native American woman growing up on a reservation and the struggles I went through, I've seen from experience, isn't given a face in mainstream society outside of the reservation. A lot of people aren't able to see what really goes on in a day in a life like I've lived. For me, the most important thing about writing my monologue, that out of all the things I had, you know, because there's a lot of editing, out of all the things that I had to compromise, rewrite, do this, you know, because there's only so much room to put everything in, you know, a couple pages. What was important for me to incorporate in my story was the part where I was just got done going to court about custody for, you know, getting my daughter back, the reunification plan that tribal court had set forth for me. And I remember being at the reservation agency cemetery, and I had just got a little over a year clean, so I had a 1 year coin, and I was visiting my friend, which we shared our same experience, you know, throughout my whole life. You know, even as a little girl, I had watched her, you know, and she was just so beautiful. But then, and she had died of an overdose a couple months before I had overdosed and then got clean. And so I had to make sure, like, I wasn't going to compromise not putting that piece of, you know, like giving more light to the people that I had lost. And then the other part about writing the monologue, I got really wrapped up in putting together, you know, fitting all of these, you know, because tying together my story. And when I wrote it, at first, you know, it isn't hard to look at my life, but when I was writing it, you know, it's just like she'd read a sentence, you know, because when we were doing the editing, Carol would read, you know, say, this sentence right here. And she's like, I want to know more about it. So, you know, first time she asked that, I'm willing to rewrite it. You know, no big deal, right? So I did it. And then I feel pretty confident about, you know, what I wrote. Like, I'm pretty detailed in this. You know, I wasn't, you know, I'm honest. I'm, you know, I'm doing, you know, check, check, check. And then I'd send it to her, and then she'd be like, rewrite it. I want to know more. And I'm like, oh my, you know, okay. So I was like, okay, you know, no big deal, right? Because we're in the beginning of the editing. just like a couple months ago. No big deal. So I was like, okay. And what I found out, because I did a lot of self-assessment and a lot of inventory about my life and looked at my life, which at one time, you know, I spent decades and years running from it, running from all the pain that I had faced and was like, unwilling almost up to the death to face those things, rewriting it. And what happened is that it brought me back to that time in my life, and it brought like all that pain back and all like the flushed feelings and like the gut wrench, like I was reliving them. And then when I was finally willing to feel the pain again and to relive that and be able to be okay after it, that's when it took on a whole new meaning for me. Because I know if I'm giving my blood, my sweat, and my tears into something, then I know I'm doing my best. I'm giving my all. There's parts in my monologue, because a lot of it's based around the criminality, of course, piece, the reentry piece, you know, what was significant around all that stuff. So for the criminality, it was based on the violence that I had witnessed, what I had learned, and like the sexual abuse, the suicide, because all the rates on reservations, you know, surpass the national average. Mm-hmm. It's considered a crisis. When I wrote this, a lot of things is I was seeing all the people, like my neighbors that had died really young, you know, my neighbor that went on the tracks and committed suicide when he was a teenager, or the boy behind me that got that was killed, you know, execution style, or, you know, the little girl that was 2 years old playing in the street that got hit by a car
and she died young because of a result of the injury she had sustained as a little girl. I mean, or the boy down the street that got stabbed in his heart and died, you know, when he was just in his early 20s. So, I mean, just seeing all that around me and living it, even though as normal as it has been, I think, you know, it's like it's hard for me writing this and focusing myself. It was hard for me to forget, you know, because all those faces, you know, of all the people that I seen die way too young keep coming up in my mind.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to Dawn for allowing me to feature your story tonight. Thank you to all the participants of Shaping a Future, Life After Prison. This was part two. The rest of the performance is being aired in segments over the next few months. Thank you to our engineers, Danielle Parks and Michael Factus. Stay with us.
And we're back at Pledge Central. I'm Karen, and I'm here with Amy. And please give us a call, 877-500-5266, and pledge your donation to KBOO. If there's something here that speaks to you, we want this conversation to continue. You just heard from Dawn on Prison Pipeline talking about her reentry into society, back to her community after incarceration in the prison system. And this is the type of public affairs programming that you really don't hear much about on other radio stations around Oregon or around the country. And KBOO brings you these, you know, and they're very difficult to listen to. They're very difficult to hear, but this is the type of programming that we need to hear, and we would love to continue this type of programming. Labor Radio, Prison Pipeline, please give us a call, 877-500-5266, or online, kboo.fm. Please contribute on behalf of a prisoner in lockdown in one of the Oregon prisons here around the state. And remember, folks, about 95% of prisoners come back to your community. So they are going to be your neighbors and your friends, and their children are going to play with your children. And we want them to be healthy, and we want them in our community. And so we have to know about what's happening within our prison systems. And only a program like Prison Pipeline brings you that very important programming. So please continue. KBOO does not shy away from these very controversial issues. And we would love to hear from you. We have $50 we have to make for this half hour of programming. Online, if you're listening online, anywhere around the state, anywhere around the country, or anywhere around the world, please show your support for KBOO by contributing online at kboo.fm and click on donate, or you can call. Amy, how can they call us?
You just have to pick up your phone, dial 877-500-5266. And yeah, this story, Dawn's story, and speaking with her, I was the person who just aired this program, the host. I just touched my heart in a really deep way, knowing about what's going on in reservations and then hearing somebody tell you their own personal experience is totally different. It takes it right into your heart, and you can really understand it. And something about that understanding, I don't know how it changes you, but it makes you more whole, or more inspired to act in this world. And that's the kind of programming you hear on KBOO Community Radio. Yeah. So pick up your phone, you hear some ringing, get in on this ring fest, 877-500-5266. And you can donate at any level, really, any amount, really. does help KBOO. I always dream of having the KBOO hoodie. It's a $25 a month donation. It's a sustaining membership, and we do usually pitch sustaining membership. We do take one-time donations as well.
It's an awesome, awesome hoodie.
Yeah, like a zip-down hoodie. It's got this cool star on top of the transmitter. And everyone knows you're cool when they see you walking around with that. And the number to call to start or increase your sustaining membership is 877-500-5266. You can also donate online at kboo.fm. And
or come into KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue here in Portland, right across the Burnside Bridge. We'd love to see you. Please come on by. There's a whole bunch of Prison Pipeline hosts here in the building right now. And come on down and meet us. We'd love to see you. Also, just for calling or coming in, bringing in your donation or going online, we can
enter you into a drawing. Today.
Yeah, tell them about the drawing.
Oh, yeah. It's for a gift certificate, which is for $250 to Portland U Brew and Pub, and it covers a beer-making experience for up to 7 people. And you get to keep 15 gallons of beer.
Party time.
If you're drinking beer at this point. Or, yeah, for sure. Definitely something nice to win.
Great time, yeah.
Yeah. So the number to call, 877-500-5266. And it'll just say that Monday, the first Monday of the month, is the Prison Pipeline meeting. And we do trainings here at KBOO, so you can be involved with radio. But you can also become a member of Prison Pipeline. 877-500-5266. 266 is the number to call.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Boki.